Hi, Small Subjects listeners. We want to hear from you. Click on the link on the blog where we post photos from each episode, www.boxdioramas.com/smallsubjects, or on our social media posts, and comment on anything we've said in this or any episode, or pose a question you'd like to hear us answer.
There's no time limit, but please try to focus your comments because we'd love to include them in full on the show. Thanks.
Welcome to Small Subjects, big ideas about miniatures and modeling. I'm Jim DeRogatis in Chicago.
And I'm Barry Biediger in Salt Lake City.
Barry, we had many pleasant chats at the IPMS Nationals Convention in Omaha.
Yeah, we did.
And I think one of the best was Pat McGrath.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
You were a big fan of his role as an actor in Father Ted.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Father Ted. You're bigger on the Brit PBS series than
well,
I
that's,
am.
Well, don't call it Brit, though. It's Irish. It's
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, no. Isn't Ireland part of Britain, but it's not part of England?
No. Ireland's
All
not
right.
part of Britain.
All right. Well, as one quarter Irish, I should know that, but I don't. I was more impressed that he was on Penny Dreadful.
I loved that show too.
Yeah. Eva Green, man. Yeah. But the reason we wanted to talk to Pat is he's a dedicated modeler, specializing in armor. Has done some figures, has also done some fantasy sculpting,
mm-hmm.
which overlaps with his fine art.
Yeah.
As I said, he's an actor. He's been in dozens, literally. Look him up on IMDb, television and film roles, and the theater, of course, as well, in Dublin. But he wrote and starred in a one-man play, mm-hmm. Small Plastic Wars.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? I love that.
It's amazing. We're going to give some thoughts about that after we chat with Pat. But I think we should talk to him first. Then we can talk a little more about the play and some other topics that sprung to mind about the overlap of miniatures and the worlds of theater and film and such.
Yep. You cut out there, but I'm going to assume that everything you said was perfect.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. It was good. All right, Pat, it's thrilling to have you on Small Subjects. Thank you for taking the time from Dublin to chat with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't think, Barry, of any other accomplished actors and playwrights who are in modeling. Can you?
No, I can't.
I absolutely loved your one-man show, Small Plastic Wars.
Oh, thank you.
That was great.
I know Barry did, too. We want to get into that. But let's start at the usual place, Pat. Sniffing glue and cutting up sprues. How'd you get started, brother?
How did I get started? I think it's, as I mentioned in the play, my dad took me to a place called Rush. It's a little seaside town where he had a caravan, and he was painting the caravan. And to keep me quiet, he bought me an old Frog Focke-Wulf 190, which I stuck together with Bostik glue and painted the same color blue that he was painting the caravan. And then I was hooked.
Yeah,
there was a shop near me called the Bamba, which had those big 125th scale Tamiya Panzers in the window. And I used to go and my nose is glued to the window. I could never afford them. I could only ever afford like the cheap Airfix Shermans, which I must have built about 50 of.
Mm. Mm. And Airfix will drive people crazy.
Yeah, but it was all we had here then. Like, this was in the 70s, so Airfix was all we had then. Matchbox arrived in two different colors, which was amazing. And then there was a shop in town which started to bring in Fujimi and Hasegawa kits, and then Tamiya. Like,
You know, Barry can't relate to this because Salt Lake City still has a number of really good hobby shops. Here I am in Chicago. There are none. I don't know if there are any by you, Pat, in Dublin.
Yeah, we've two really good hobby shops. Mm. We have a place called Mark's Models in the city center, and that's great. I was in there today. But they also have a big warehouse, which is not too far outside Dublin, maybe 20 minutes by car, which they open. It's open to the public. And then we have a shop called Walsh's, which is run by a fellow called Paul Walsh, and he sells everything.
Yeah.
He sells Militaria, and he sells, he does a lot of stock or stash clearances. People who pass on and their families bring their stashes in. And I believe Paul told me some of these stashes have been through the shop three or four times.
There's a sadness there. But also, you know, people are continuing to get joy from something that somebody bought that they intended to build. So, you know, but the reason I ask is the source of community. And this is in your play as well. You know, a hobby shop isn't just transactional. It's not a place to go and sell you stuff. It's a place where we get hooked on this odd pursuit of ours and come together and meet other people who love it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the best part of my visit to the model shop today was talking to the guy behind the counter, Simon, you know, because I haven't seen him in a while.
Were you regaling him with, were you regaling Simon with tales of traveling to the,
He was asking
American city of Omaha.
Yeah. He was asking me all about it. You couldn't believe the amount of jealousy here.
Oh, that you got to go to IPMS Nationals.
That I got to go to America. Yeah.
Well, I would have, there's about 100 cities I think you would have found more entertaining than Omaha, but next time.
But one of the weird things was that a friend, a guy I went to college with, turned out to live 5 minutes away from the convention center. A guy I studied art with in Dublin, and he's married to an American. He's literally 5 minutes away.
Wow. In suburban Omaha, that's amazing. Now, I'm sure Omaha itself is not too bad, Jim.
I've been to Omaha itself to do a public radio thing, and it is not much different than the suburb.
Yeah, but you think that anything that's smaller than New York is a little town. So
or Chicago. I think Chicago holds its own. Okay. Yeah, I've been to Los Angeles. That's a cool place to visit. Pat, an accomplished armor modeler. I've seen a bunch of your work on Facebook. Also a sculptor, if I'm not wrong, who favors orcs in the fantasy realm.
Yeah, I don't know why orcs. Maybe they're easier to sculpt than humans. But I studied sculpture in college. I mean, that's what I did for 4 years. So it wasn't all a waste of time.
No, not at all. Yeah, I've seen some of your artwork on your blog. And I have to tell you, I love it. It's abstract. I don't know what genre you consider it, but it's abstract to me. It's,
I don't know, maybe expressionism.
Expressionism.
That was all the rage in the 80s.
Yeah, I love it, though. I'd like to see some more of that spirit brought into the miniature and model world.
That's what I'm trying. I have done kind of miniatures, included them in my artwork. But I haven't managed to do it the other way around. I haven't managed to incorporate that expressionism in the model work.
I'd like to see some of that happen in model shows and just blow people's minds. They don't know what to do with it and maybe even get kicked out of a show or two. That's my goal.
We're punk rock in that way, Pat.
Have a salon de refuse.
So art school, and then you did time in the army,
The other way around. I went into the army first when I left school because I didn't get into college. So I did 3 years in the army, in the Irish army, in the infantry and the military police. And, that kind of stood to me. I still have shiny shoes.
Do you find that did that fuel an interest in military vehicles, or that was already there?
I think that was already there. In fact, I gave up modeling when I joined the Army. And then came back to it when I was in college. Because I saw another artist using. She had an old monogram Sherman that she was using in one of her artworks. Mm. And then she didn't want it and said, "Do you want that?" And I went, "Yeah, I used to do that kind of stuff." And that was it then. I was back full time.
Yeah.
And I finally had the money to buy all those things. I think that's what a lot of people who take a break do. They come back and then they go wild on eBay.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I saw a picture on Facebook of the stash of stuff you brought back from Omaha. The vendors were pretty incredible. Barry and I had the same.
One of the guys, he was reducing his stuff. He said, "Anything there for a dollar?" And I was going, "God, if I could fit it all in the suitcase, I'd
buy them." So, we referenced you being an actor. You've done a tremendous amount of theater, television, and film. You know, The Tudors, Ella Enchanted. You were Father Ted. You were Hud Hastings. Barry's a big fan. Angela's Ashes.
Yeah.
And Penny Dreadful. I gotta geek out, man. Did you get to meet Eva Green?
I did. I did.
Wow!
The scene I had was with herself and Timothy Dalton. You know, so yeah, I did. I did get to meet her. I haven't recovered.
Man, Queen of the Goths. That's bragging rights forever. She's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The life of an actor is tough, but because sometimes you're working all the time and sometimes you're not working. So in between gigs, you're modeling all the time?
Yeah, but I teach as well now. I teach art to adults in the adult education system here. You know, it's mostly drop-in classes, but that kind of keeps me going between acting gigs, which in the past couple of years have been, you know, kind of sparse.
Yeah, well, COVID shut everything down, no?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
All right, so we've been avoiding talking about small plastic wars, but we're dying to get into it. Barry, you start us off.
I have just seen a couple of things on Facebook, and it didn't register what it was until it was Chris Meddings, I think, said, "Oh, you've got to check this out." And I absolutely loved it. I only listened to it for the first time a couple weeks ago. I think it's one of those things where even if you know nothing about modeling, it's going to be entertaining. But to a modeler, there's just so much in there that we can all relate to. We've all had those experiences. Did you base it on all real-world experiences, things you've gone through?
Yeah, yeah. I think everything that happened in the play, nearly everything that happened in the play happened in real life. It was one of those things. There was a program for actors to write their own work.
Mm.
And my niece, who's involved in theater, said, "You should do that." And I said, "What would I do it about?" And she said, "Do it about that modeling stuff. That sounds crazy. Like all the stories that would tell her." So I had to go and pitch it. And I went and pitched this. And one of the people I had to pitch it to turned out later, he was the dramaturg that worked with me. He turned out to have been, into role playing games, live action role playing games, but had done a lot of war gaming. So he was sold from the get-go. And the others then, it's amazing how many people out there have experience of modeling or have experience of people who model. Do you know, loads of people said, "Oh, yeah, my brother has all that stuff under his bed," or, "Yeah, my dad was massively into that." So, yeah, it was kind of based all on real life. And, the shop in it is Walsh's shop, like.
Does he even walk you to the door and get rid of
it? You might deny that if you said it to him, but he does. He still does it.
Instead, I drop into Clarkie's model shop. Not to buy anything, usually. Just to talk. If you overstay, you're welcome. He has this way of getting you out of the shop when he's fed up with you. He walks over to the door, still talking, but he drops his voice. So you have to follow him to hear what he's saying. Then he steps out, as if to get a bit of air. And when you step out beside him, he steps back in real quick. It's like that scene on the train in The French Connection. But before you can step back in, he claps you on the shoulder and says, "Well, so long, pal. I'll see you next week." And you're halfway down the road before you think to yourself, "I'd no intention of leaving that shop at all."
No.
I've added up. There's a great German saying, I'm feeling visited enough. So after you've spent your money and you have a bag full of stuff, he's feeling visited enough, the shopkeeper walks you out.
Yeah, well, also, I think he gets visited by a lot of people who, they just go there for the chats and the cups of teas. So, eventually when he figures out they're not actually going to buy out today, then it's like, out the door.
Yeah, it's not a social club. There's a surprising amount of pathos in Small Plastic Wars. Whether it's the notion of competing, and I want to let's start there with the notion of competing. There's a German obsessed character who's always lecturing, essentially a rivet counter. You've got this wrong, you've got that wrong, kind of killing the joy of you as the character in the play at times,
but with some Werribee mixed in, not just rivet counter.
Werribee?
Yeah, Werribee. You guys
that?
Are familiar with that term.
No.
Somebody who just thinks that the ultimate army in the world was the World War II German army, and that,
Oh, yeah, and the Tiger tank was the best tank ever invented.
Yeah. It's amazing that, most of them, I think, believe that the Germans actually won the war sometimes.
Yeah. You're on thin ice there, Barry. if we ventured a little further from the convention center in Omaha, we might have met some of those people, unfortunately.
It's possible.
But this guy is kind of a killjoy. And I wanted to ask you about the notion of what we all just experienced a couple of weeks ago at IPMS, right? So suppose you were up for the role of Tom Hagen in The Godfather, right? And Robert Duvall beat you out, right? Or you beat him out. I mean, would you have felt a sense of victory? I don't understand the competition contest mentality that I must be better, I got second place, that guy got nothing. I think artists who come from other realms, like the visual arts like you do, and acting like you do, I'm a writer, do I think some book that I've written is not as good because it wasn't, Stephen King or Harry Potter? No, I don't see creating anything as competitive.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, I'm actually the competition secretary for IPMS Ireland, so I'm going to be running the competition that we have in September. And, some people are competitive. Some people aren't. There's some great modelers in our club who never enter the competition. They bring their models along to the club table, they bring them along to the monthly meetings, but they never put them in the competition. It's interesting because I know I listened to your discussion with John Bonanni about the open system versus the 1-2-3 system. And I kind of haven't got my head around the open system. I haven't been to any competitions like that. But there are some really competitive modelers out there, and then there are some who don't care, But it's interesting here because it's such a small, we have three shows here. There's our show, the IPMS show, there's the Irish Model Soldier Society show, and then there's the Northern Ireland Modelers Association show up in Belfast, which we go to. And they're all 1-2-3 shows. But, you can get the same models at each show, and the same people every year. It's kind of big fish in a small pond kind of thing,
Irish Model Soldiers, though, that's open system, isn't it, Pat?
No.
It's 1-2-3. Yeah.
I thought it was.
About how many entries do you get in those shows?
In our show, I think the most we've had was 350.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah. Not insubstantial. Yeah. Did you walk away from IPMS Nationals with anything, Pat?
No, I didn't enter anything. I had something in the in the Plastic Posse podcast group build.
That was I saw that. Yeah,
The M31.
I just wanted to enjoy my time there without kind of being concerned with like the competition or anything, you know?
Yeah.
But wouldn't it have been great to, under the open system, have an evaluation of that piece that was in the group build?
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking of that because we don't do that. We don't give any feedback, you know, and it's generally frowned upon to go looking for a judge and say, well, what was wrong with my model, you know?
Yeah. I saw it on Facebook. I think that's a silver medal ordnance piece.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah. It was nice. And it's not, a lot of times they talk about just go find a judge. When it comes down to it, that is often a confrontational thing that's happening there. It's not a friendly, hey, we just want to talk, you know?
Yeah. All right. Another thing that's an element of pathos in this fantastic play. You know, there's kind of a conflict back and forth with the family, you know, resenting the wife especially, but also the kids, resenting you taking time away from them or being distracted. And you capture so well. I sat down at my modeling desk and suddenly it was 12 hours later. Happens to all of us. And they both enjoy that you have something or take pride that you have something that you love, but also resent that it takes you away.
Yeah, I think so. I'm lucky. My wife, like, fully supports me. She does kind of say, why do you need so many models? But I ask myself that question as well. But no, I feel you do hear guys saying, how am I going to get this into the house? Or she who must be obeyed, you know. For instance, there's a bit in the play about one of the guys having a stash of several hundred airplanes, and one of the guys in the club was driving home from the show with his wife, and his wife said, God, that fella in the play had like 400 airplanes or something. That's mad. And he was driving. He was going, I have that.
He's doing the tally in his head. Yeah. How many do I have? Yeah. Well, Barry and I always say, you know, you could be wasting that money at strip clubs or gambling or, you know.
Yeah. I don't collect bottles of whiskey, you know, empty bottles. You know what I mean?
But, you know, I saw that a little bit different way, though, because I thought what you were portraying in that was somebody who's gotten themselves in a really rough time in their life and becomes obsessed, and it's more a symptom of that, of withdrawing because of, you know, stress in your life, rather than the hobby being a villain. I don't know if I took that
right. Yeah, no, I think that's right. The character in the play is like he's lost his job and he's struggling. And I think that, I think you mentioned it, I can't remember who you were talking to, but we control what's going on the bench, do you know? Mm-hmm. Even if we've lost control of what's going on in our lives, do you know? I think that's partly what was going on with that character.
And there is this uplifting element that all builds to, despite self-deprecating, making fun of the geekiness of this hobby and people wondering what the heck you're doing, all that stuff. You know, in the end, it's clearly a lifeline. And I think when that ultimate debate always comes up, Pat, is modeling art, right? And I think it can certainly be artistic. You know, some of the stuff we saw in Omaha, if we got you to any of the great figure shows, right? You know, of course it's art. And all art is escape and uplift and transcendence of the everyday. Or am I waxing like the critic and you're the actor, visual artist, thinking, what the hell is this guy going on about?
No, I think modeling can be art, but I think it's different things to different people. I mean, there's some people who like to draw, but to them it's not art. They just like to do it, you know. And I know people who like to model. They kind of do their two or three hours at the bench, like, and it just fulfills them in a way. They're not aiming to create the best model there ever was. They just want to make something, you know. But I think there's certainly people out there like Jean-Bernard Andre, in Belgium. Like, he's an artist. Yeah. There's no question about that, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, the second time I listened to the play, I looked at your blog and noticed that right around the time it came out, you won Best of Show, the IPMS Ireland, and it was just the perfect punctuation at the end of listening to that.
Yeah.
Was that part of prompting the story, or was it did that come afterwards?
I think it came the play came afterwards, so maybe it was that I felt I could write about, like, possibly winning Best in Show.
Chairman, thanks. I'm building this tank for the Nationals. The International Plastic Modeler Society, Ireland, Four Provinces Branch National Show and Competition this year in Dublin, with modelers coming from all over Ireland and beyond competing for glory and medals, and if they win, the everlasting begrudgery of their fellow modelers. October the 12th and 13th, all models to be on the table by 1 o'clock or they will not be judged. And which I'm planning to win. Not just the gold in the armour section, but Best in Show.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, if you're going to write, it's funny because the way I pitched it was completely different. You know, you go in and you pitch these things, and I was wandering around town before I went in to pitch the play, and I was thinking, how am I going to get this across to them? Like, So I pitched it. I picked up a book in a bookshop, and it was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's Seven Stages of Grief. And I thought, So I used that. And I went, right, so the guy loses his job. Like, he's in disbelief. Then he's imploring. And I pitched it like that. And I kind of used the Best in Show thing as that kind of unattainable thing to go for. I mean, I didn't write it. It didn't work out like the Seven Stages of Grief, but that was just something to hang it on at the pitching session. But I think competition works for something like that. That's the conflict in the play.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, it gives you something to shoot for.
Yeah.
I have a deadline. I have to make it. But that's the same of a juried exhibition, like under the open system. And in the play, you don't make it anyway.
Yeah.
No, spoiler alert. hopefully people will listen anyway. You don't make it to the show, but that doesn't really matter. Because the joy you got modeling and ultimately your kids who destroyed your model are way more important.
Yeah.
No, that was, I love the way it ended. And I'd like to meet somebody who thinks that it was a disappointing ending because they totally missed the point of the play, if that's the case. You mentioned to me that you had an Easter egg when you performed this live.
Yeah.
And I don't think Jim heard about that.
Okay, so in the play, I refer to my father having started me off on the road to modeling. And I have, like, the backdrop for the play was a lot of model posters and model instructions and a big Kelly's Hero poster. But then there was a photograph, which I referred to, pointed to when I was talking about my father. But it was, it wasn't a photograph of my father. It was actually a photograph of Shep Payne. And I thought, like, that'd be a good Easter egg because any modelers who come to the show will know who that is.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to meet Shep?
No. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
No, I listened to your podcast with him to the interview. And I watched it. There was an interview. There's an interview up on YouTube, I think, as well with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He would have got along famously. He would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I imagine because they were one of the things as well that got me into modeling was the monogram sheets, the diorama sheets. No.
How did you set out sculpting?
I did it in college, yeah. And then I can't remember what kind of compelled me to just get out. I got some Sculpey, you know, that oven hardening clay and some green stuff. And I built this, an arc. It's enormous, actually. It's twice the size of my hand. Somebody was saying if you cast that, like, you're talking about a pound of resin in each thing. Wasn't as big as the Greg Chillar's orc that was at the show, though.
Yeah.
But then I just started doing some more. I've cast a few. I haven't really sold them. Steve Munsell from Value Gear, I sent him one, and he cast a few, and he sold a few at the show. Well, we gave a lot away as well.
Mm. You know? Mm. Have you done 135th, 132nd figures to
accompany
your armor? Yeah.
Yeah, I have. And that is where I'd like to keep going, you know, with that. I'm terrible, though. I start more than I finish. You know, I start. The Shelf of Shame or Shelf of Doom or whatever. Like, I've a lot of armatures and 135th scale figures kind of half built and orc skulls and busts.
Yeah. See, Jim, I'm not the only one.
I start something, I finish it. It might suck, but at least I finished it.
Yeah. You're lucky. I my resolution having come home from Omaha was that I won't buy any models, because I will, but I know I will buy models. To only be fooling myself if I say that, but that I'll finish stuff before I start anything else. I'm firm in that resolve.
All right. We'll keep an eye on you, Pat. We're going to check back on you. Have you ever thought of performing Small Plastic Wars at one of these gatherings? I would love to see that.
Yeah, there was talk of it. I did offer to do it for the Irish Model Soldiers Society as a fundraiser, but I can't remember. That kind of fell through. I did think of doing it as smaller episodes on YouTube, but illustrating it with model figures rather than live action, you know. Again, it's just actually sitting down and doing that.
So the same show as a serial on YouTube?
Yeah, just 5 or 10 minutes each one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Animated by miniature figures. That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah. I think just a live performance at a show would be extremely popular and a lot of fun.
That's why you're lucky you never got to meet Shep Payne, because he'd have had you wrapped into doing that.
You would have been enrolled to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say that while the IPMS Ireland show was on a couple of years ago, I was performing it at night in a nearby theater, which was like maybe 500 meters away from the venue, and all the modelers went to the pub. I think maybe half a dozen came to see the show.
Oh, man. Wow. Rather drink than consume art.
Yeah.
What's on your workbench right now?
What's on my workbench right now? I have a couple of things that I want to finish up. I have a little diorama with a Humber armored car. That I have a 135th scale Humber scout car. Sorry, Humber scout car. And then I'm building Anakin's pod racer from Star Wars. I'm actually going to, we have a table at Dublin Comic Con this weekend. I was in there today setting it up, and they've given us more space than we thought. So I'm going to bring that with me tomorrow and spend the day building that.
Are you going to dress as an orc for Comic Con?
No, I was going to dress up. I did have a plan to dress up as, I don't know if you know, the Porco Rosso, you know, the anime movie. I was going to dress up as Porco Rosso, make the mask and all. But we did say last, because we did the spring edition back in March, and we were saying, next time we'll dress up. So we had all kinds of promises of people going to be stormtroopers and the like. But
it's a dangerous dangerous place to be for a gentleman at Comic Con. The amount of Princess Leia as slave of Jabba the Hutt and Wonder Women and their underwear and
That's like, I mean, I'll tell you a little story. I went to when my daughter was younger. She was about maybe 9 years old, and she was into playing Pokemon card games. So I agreed to go with her to this, it wasn't a Comic-Con, it was called Leprechaun. And it was the same kind of thing, but there was a Pokemon tournament, and I could go with her and get in free. So I went, and I brought a book with me, and I was sitting there I got a cup of coffee and I sat down. I could see where she was playing her Pokemon tournament. And this girl in a Japanese maid costume came up to me and said, can we take this table? And I was like, oh, no, look, this is the only place I found to sit with me coffee and me book. And, you know, I could see my daughter over there. And I really don't want to give up this table. And she was going, well, we need it. We need it for the Japanese maid cafe. And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, all the girls who came dressed as Japanese maids were setting up a cafe and were going to serve the customers and all. And I was, no, I really don't want to give up the table. And she said, well, look, you're welcome. You can come and sit in the Japanese maid cafe. And I was like, no, that would not be a good look for me. No, I just don't want to do that. I gave them the table in the end, but I didn't go and sit in the Japanese maid cafe.
Yeah, it's like being a teacher on Halloween.
Yeah.
When the kids go, it's like, whew, you know, Tony teaches high school in my band, Barry, and he talks about, you know, dreading Halloween because it's like you don't know where to look.
I will say, though, that I love going to Comic-Con. I'd never experienced it before. I think Comic-Con is amazing. Just the freedom of expression, and people can go and dress whatever way they want and no questions asked, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's John Bonini was talking about wishing that modeling gatherings had a little more of that spirit.
Yeah, not the dressing up, though.
Not the dressing up. No, wouldn't want to see any modeler I know in those costumes. Yeah.
John Bonini was saying that as well. I'm here to correct you. Sorry.
All right, thank you.
Rivet counter.
Yeah, he is a rivet counter, man.
And I'm proud of it. What are the differences between the Irish model shows and the U.S., the nationals you went to? Obviously, it was a massive show, but I mean, otherwise.
I think that's the big thing. Like, it's just a question of scale. We don't have that many branches. We have three branches here in Ireland. So we have, each one of them has a table, a display table for people who don't want to be in the competition. We might have a couple of small seminars, people doing demos. I know the Irish Model Soldier Society get Hilary Doyle. He's a member of their club. So he comes and he gives a lecture every year at their show. He didn't this year. I think he was busy. But and we have, like, the big thing at our show is the kit swap, where people sell off their own models, you know? That's one of the most popular things at our show. Other than that, it's just a massive scale. I think, that competition, I mean, what did John say there was? 3,500 models? 2,800 modelers, I think.
Yeah,
That's huge. I mean, that's bigger than I mean, Telford. I've been to Telford in the UK, and that's massive. But their big thing is their special interest groups, where you know there'll be a special interest group dedicated to you know, Focke Wulf 190s or something. Just, you know, tables full of that, and all the different special interest groups and the club displays. That's the big thing in Telford, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like the Irish shows are very similar to the British shows.
Yeah.
I would like to see more. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one, but I know the idea of bringing models for display only was not met with a lot of enthusiasm when it was brought up for nationals. I would like to see some of that at our IPMS shows.
Somebody told me that the Shizuoka show in Japan is like that. It's a trade show, but then I think the last weekend of it is just people bring models to display.
Yeah.
And they don't, there's no competition at all.
Yeah.
Which I think is phenomenal. Yeah.
We're okay, Pat, to drop in some samples of your one man play?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, I feel like, we could just run the whole thing. It's so brilliant. We will link to it. We'll link to your blog. I pulled a bunch of your recent armor. The diorama you're doing with the Humber, is that the Humber that I saw on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So now you're going to put it in a scene.
Yeah, I'm going to put in a little scene with a crew where, and hopefully make it look as if it's raining. I'm going to have one of the guys with an umbrella and some civilian refugees walking by him.
Oh, that's ambitious. Yeah. Rain is tough. Yeah. Yeah, we've seen some good rain, Barry.
There's that one French modeler did the actual raindrops. I don't know if you've seen that. It was amazing.
Was it an artillery train?
Something like that with the raindrops. That was very ambitious. Very good stuff. But I like the figure in your tank that we see through the driver's hatch.
That's what Barry and I
always go to the figures.
The perfect way to display a figure. I love the way you painted that too.
Yeah. It's weird. I used to be much better at painting figures, and it's like going to the gym. Not that I have huge experience of that, but if you stop doing it, you kind of lose it, you know?
Yeah. But you paint, or at least that figure is painted in a kind of an impressionistic style.
Yeah.
And I love that myself.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's the great thing about orcs. Who's to say you're wrong?
Well,
his right tooth is not long enough.
I did put up an orc with two heads once. Mm. I did an orc with two heads. And I made the mistake of putting it on an orc page on Facebook. And I was told that you wouldn't ever get an orc with two heads because the other orcs would kill it. They wouldn't suffer it to live. It would be blasphemous. No. Wow.
This is based on extensive interviewing experience with orcs on the part of these people.
Mm. Yeah, great.
I lost the entire Eva Green answer, too, so I can't wait to hear this episode.
Oh. Yeah, you're gonna...
It was phenomenal.
It was great.
I'm sure it was. Yeah. You were a mortician in that episode, is that right?
Yeah.
I got to go back and find it. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
A jolly mortician?
Huh?
A jolly mortician?
Yeah.
Happy?
Yeah.
Happy
fun? I think it was the first episode. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. That was all downhill after that then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Pat. What a treat. Thank you. It was great meeting you in person, man.
Yeah. That was fabulous.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Pat. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, talking to Pat.
Really nice guy. He's cool.
Really nice guy. Yeah. And I can't recommend enough that every modeler who enjoys this podcast, every modeler, period. Mm. But if you're listening to us especially, check out Small Plastic Wars. It's about an hour-long drama monologue. Pat sent us some photos of him in the production in Ireland. And it's available as a radio play online. Yeah. And it's just freaking brilliant.
Yeah. I think even people who aren't modelers but who know modelers would love it. I think it's one of those things you could sit down with your spouse and listen to and they would be entertained.
Right, if they have no interest at all about modeling. Yeah. Because there are several deeper themes there. One that I wanted to mention up top, he said... he says at one point in the play that perhaps the allure of modeling is that if only on the workbench, if only in 1/48th or 1/35th scale, you can at least try to create a perfect world.
Mm, yeah. Yep.
Right? And I had said that to Shep when we were doing hours and hours and hours of interviews for the book I did about his life and work. I floated this philosophical theory that maybe part of the allure is creating this perfect world in miniature. Mm. I think we were talking specifically about the box dioramas. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much chaos in life for so many of us so often. Life is chaos. Mm. I'm going to get French existential on you for a second. Mm. But we can control this one thing. And he scoffed at me in that Shepley way.
I can just hear it. Did you write this in the book? Because I can hear what I
think I did. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What do you recall him saying?
Well, I just remember him saying something like, well, I wouldn't take that idea too far. Or something
that. So, classic show. I don't know if I'd buy into that. It's about storytelling, which, Lord knows, we have emphasized quite a lot in this podcast. It's our philosophy, too. But I think that there is something there to the creation of a world. I think that people in all miniature pursuits, whether it's model railroads or dollhouses or what we do or plastic modeling, yeah. I think there's something there.
Yeah, I know there is. Maybe not for everyone, but I know for me there is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and none of us achieve perfection, but it's at least trying to and controlling this one aspect in our art. I think the other thing, the other two themes that are really deep in Pat's play are, one, the competition, kind of souring it if you allow it to. And that's something we talked about as our whole episode sort of with JB from IPMS. And I think it sours some people, takes the joy out of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I know you have bouts of feeling that way.
About the judging and the awards, yes, definitely.
Because not that we ever feel bad ourselves. I feel bad to see other people disappointed.
Or just, you know, putting too much emphasis on it and everything being centered around it. That's what bothers me about it a lot of times. I just don't understand the idea that whether or not you do this hobby is based on what awards you get or just getting awards over and over again. I don't really quite understand it. I mean, I understand the idea. It feels great to get a gold, and it's a good idea to know how well you're doing and to actually get honest feedback, as we keep saying, about where you are, how well you're doing, but it's just not the only reason to do the hobby.
No. And the other theme that I mentioned that Pat touches on in Small Plastic Wars is turning to the modeling bench, or really any artistic pursuit, as an escape from the troubles in your life, right?
Yeah.
And I relate to that deeply. I don't know about you.
I do. Not so much now. It's not anywhere near. I mean, I went through a time in my life where actually it wasn't about control, but it was the escape. And I lived in a 1/35th scale world for a while. So, yeah.
When was that?
I'm not a normal person. So when I hear about, when I turned 14, all that went away. Probably from the age of, well, I know exactly from the age of 12 to around, maybe 18.
Those are tough years.
Yeah.
You were simultaneously learning to play guitar, right?
No, I didn't. I never touched a guitar until I was in my 20s.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
My many years of experience as a music journalist and critic, I think it's those years, those troublesome adolescent years, where people, shunned by the rest of the world, not fitting in with anyone, take to the bedroom and master their instrument.
Yeah.
You know, it's where all great rock stars come from. Rock star. All great musicians with something important to say. Whether they become a star or not is irrelevant, just like winning a gold. But, you know, I find, especially in stressful times, you're always saying, and so are the boys at the Military Miniature Society of Illinois, are saying, how are you so productive? And, you know, I often find myself, like, getting up early, like 5 o'clock, and sitting down for an hour or 90 minutes or 2 hours if I can stretch it. If I start my day with some modeling, you know, some sculpting, some painting, it's like the whole rest of the day is better.
You know, I think I've thought about this a lot recently, and I think it's kind of the same for us in that way. It's just we're approaching it a different way, or we do it in a different way, because when I sit down, it takes me forever to do anything, and it's not because I don't want to do it. It's because I sit down and I daydream. I'll just catch myself having spent 15 minutes thinking about something. So it's the same effect, the same overall effect. Yeah. It's just not as efficient as far as getting stuff done.
Well, so. I spend so much time in front of the computer, either writing or researching to do the radio show or grading papers for school, that, you know, the act of having the X-Acto or the toothpick and the putty in my hands, it's literally physical therapy.
And being a computer cartographer / programmer / developer, yeah. I hardly ever see a computer.
Yeah, you live on the computer. Right. I know what you're saying. Yeah. But don't you like doing something physical that isn't in front of a screen?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big thing.
Yeah. You know, I was also moved on the podcast panel at IPMS when our friend Will Pattison, fellow podcaster, was talking about after the accident that put him in his wheelchair.
Yeah.
He had to do physical therapy, and he was, you know, being driven crazy with these, like, puzzle wood pieces or whatever they give you. And he said, I'm going to build models. Mm-hmm. This is my physical therapy. And literally, it helped him back to the land of the living.
Yeah. 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 Talk about it being valuable.
Yeah. A worthy pursuit. I mean, which is not to say we don't occasionally throw a X-Acto knife at the wall.
Right. And I'm not saying this just because he's my friend, but it's not like he's just slapping models together. I mean, he builds at a very high level.
Yeah.
And that's amazing to me. I don't know how he does that. That's pretty impressive.
But he's also not afraid to try and fail.
No.
The last week or so, he's been struggling with applying that thin foil as a reflective coat on an aircraft. It's been driving him crazy. I have been empathizing. I haven't posted on Facebook because I hate Facebook in empathy with him. But when I did my Apollo 11 box diorama, you know, you have to coat the lunar module, half of it, in that gold foil. And oh my God, it sticks to everything. The glue gets everywhere. It's the most frustrating thing ever.
And luckily on that, you can put it on crinkled. It was actually crinkled on the
It was actual, actually crinkled. Yeah. You know, to get it nice and smooth like he's doing. But even that, even being miserable and failing and coming away with a wreck of a model is fun to me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's too much fun for me, but...
You don't like to fail as much as I do.
I don't, but oh well.
Oh well. You know, the other thing was 2 years ago in the Scabbard, we'd had a discussion of miniatures in film and television. Started on Facebook, and it kind of ran into the Scabbard. I collected all the pieces, all the films and TV shows that people were talking about. But I don't know about you, but on the very rare, very, very rare occasions when I see somebody on screen doing what we do, I like jump for joy. It gets me very excited.
Well, it's almost like when you see a movie and all of a sudden you realize it's in your hometown. It's being filmed in your hometown, right?
Right, in a locale where you used to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's fascinating. And now I don't know, and I want to throw this out to our listeners. You know, I don't know of another piece of art, theater, play, film that's entirely devoted to modeling the way Pat's Small Plastic Wars is. Do you?
No, I can't think of one.
An hour... obviously, as we've said, it's about much more. You know, in the play, he turns to modeling because he's been laid off, and he's got all these pressures at home, and, you know, the desire to control one element. All these things are in the play. Mm-hmm. But like an entire piece of art, you know, I'll settle for a quick glimpse of somebody doing modeling on screen. So, you know, some of the things that the fellows in the MMSI turned to was... I think, you know, hands down, the best movie with the best depiction of painting miniatures is, you know, the old 1975 Sidney Pollack film, 3 Days of the Condor.
Mm-hmm. Excellent film, even if it didn't have miniatures.
It would be an excellent film. It's got that great 70s Cold War spy thing happening, right? Yep. But Max von Sydow, mm-hmm. the older Exorcist mm-hmm. in The Exorcist, yeah. right, is painting what appears to be Staddens. And you were quizzing in the discussion we had on Facebook, you know, what are those odd-looking paints? And it was our buddy Tony shot back that they look like Imre Risley.
Yeah, yeah. I don't recognize most of that stuff from back in that those times because I'm a youngin. I'm
you're encyclopedic.
I'm 54
knowledge.
Years old, so you know I yeah.
Oh, you have this encyclopedic knowledge. You know of everything that's ever run in campaigns and everywhere else.
I don't know. I did not recognize the paints whatsoever because back at that time I would have been using the Tester's little square bottles from yeah. Kmart. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were young at that point, but yeah. Serious painters were going for the Imre Risley. I've heard the older guys in the MMSI talk about they had added some scent to them. They yeah. apparently smelled really nice.
Yeah, I've never. You know, have you ever actually seen it? You?
I've bottle? Never seen one. I think Mike Cobb must have had a couple of jars because he had everything. Yeah. But I didn't bother to open one to see what they smelled like.
Yeah, I don't know how much I would like that, because I got some of this, what's that guy's name? The artist who, he in reaction to that artist who was the only one allowed to use that Vanta Black, remember?
Oh, the ultimate black,
yeah,
the blackest black.
Yeah, he made his blackest black paint, and he put a yeah. scent in it. And I can't even stand it. Did I give that bottle to you? I think I did, but it probably smells so offensive. You probably threw it away, but
I don't recall that at all.
Yeah. Maybe it ended up in the box or fell out and it's in your garage.
You gave me that stash of Mission Models paint.
Yeah. It was when I gave you that stuff. It was,
which goes into the airbrush like peanut butter.
But you have to thin it.
Yeah. Even thinned like 80%. Never mind. That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah.
That paint is dangerous to airbrushers. No, I don't. So you don't like smelly paint?
No, I like the smell of paint, but I don't think I would like scented paint.
Mike Cobb was so bad, he didn't like that odorless turpentine. He loved the smell of real turpentine.
Yeah, I don't know if I could hang with that. That gets kind of rough.
It gets kind of rough.
Yeah.
You know, another older classic is Ronin. From 1998, you know, the version with Jean Reno and Stellan Skarsgård and Robert De Niro. And there's the French agent in that film is building a diorama of samurai warriors. And it's like a serious miniature, piece of miniatures, you know, complete with the jeweler's illuminated ring and... he's doing, you know, good work.
You know, I've never seen that movie. A friend of mine...
Oh, that's a good movie.
Well, he told me about it because of that in the mm-hmm. movie, and I've never seen it. But that was a friend who didn't think what I did was geeky. And I've had some friends who think it's just the dorkiest thing ever, too, so...
Well, obviously, that's the way it was played in a more modern film, 40-Year-Old Virgin.
that's exactly the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
You know, Steve Carell is this hopeless nerd of nerds, and he's painting his miniatures, and they actually look like 54-millimeter military miniatures, where the rest of his life is Star Wars and obsessive yeah. Science fiction. You know, he's painting a little soldier, and he's, like, talking to it and saying, yeah, I think it's actually a, oh, my goodness. What is that name of
it looks like
soldiers?
A Shenandoah Zouave.
The French kind of.
Zouave.
Zouave. A Zouave, yes.
I think it's a Shenandoah Zouave, if I'm
a
if
Shenandoah
I'm not mistaken.
Zouave.
Is it? You know, the
yeah,
company Shenandoah?
I would say it is. I can put the picture on the blog if I misidentified it, if we misidentified it, they can correct us. But I think it's, yeah, so yeah. I think it's a Zouave, and he's saying, now I'm going to paint your silver pants blue.
Yeah. Yeah, now you're going to get me all worked up, because this, I have bad memories of this. So when I...
of 40-year-old virgin, or of painting a Shenandoah Zouave?
Yeah, painting silver pants blue, yeah. So some friends at work, friends at work, of course, you know, they Google coworkers, I guess, because they're sitting on a computer all day and need to figure out what to do. And I think
so they're spying on their coworkers, looking up stuff from their background.
Yeah. And of course, if you Google my name, one of the first things that comes up, especially at that time, was something about World Expo in Boston. And they knew I had taken a trip there. And for years, they just thought it was the funniest thing to keep repeating the silver pants blue thing. They thought that was hilarious because they didn't have any sense of humor of their own. They just take somebody else's joke and run with it. Yeah.
Wow. That's borderline hostile.
Yeah. Well, what do you expect?
I don't know. I've never worked in a situation like that.
So maybe it's just because I'm cranky. I'm just going to mention this. A lot of times people will make fun of stuff and it's like an inside joke, or it's in good spirit and good fun. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely not in good fun. That was more like, these people aren't as cool as us. You know, there's some of that too. I just don't feel like it's the same as, you know, lightheartedly, you know. Well, you can picture somebody like John Rosengrant joking around with, you know, people he works with. You know, geeky stuff. But that's...
Yeah, well, Joe Burton has always joked, you know, this hobby's about painting midgets and weenies.
And I got to tell you something about that. So you're getting me all worked up now. I'm all cranky about everything.
Yeah, you are cranky. I'm trying to give you catharsis.
It's been a cranky couple of days for me, but...
Yeah, well, at least you haven't been subpoenaed by the worst predator in the history of popular music.
That's probably next, you know. I'll probably be assaulted by, I don't know, IPMS people or something. I don't know.
All right, okay. Well, so what were you going to say?
They're not as intimidating.
Well, crank out. Go ahead.
Okay. I hate that phrase. I absolutely hate
midgets
that phrase.
And weenies?
Yes, because if you say that, is it a regional thing? If you say midgets and weenies, that doesn't sound like, you know, little soldiers you're painting. That sounds like something totally different.
Plastic wars. Yeah.
If you say weenies, I've never heard of anybody say weenie that they don't mean, you know.
I think of little hot dogs in a biscuit.
Yeah. Or
the other thing, I know.
Right. I don't understand that term or that phrase.
I don't know. I think it came from, you know, Joe Burton and Lane Stewart, the photographer who did a book on photographing miniatures with Shep. And they were kids and they were goofing around.
I understand the point.
Take it too seriously. So, I mean, you can come up with a better... phrase for it, you know.
I know. It's not like I'm going to stop you from saying it, but I just, it always just kind of...
I'm just quoting it. Heard it 10, 15 years ago. It made me laugh. It stuck with me.
But there's also something, I agree that it shouldn't be taken seriously. Yeah, and there are people who take it way too seriously. And I laugh about the hobby and joke around, but there's another side to that too, because it's, just because it's a hobby doesn't mean that it's not important and serious.
Not art. I mean, it certainly can be.
Yeah. So I don't know. It doesn't necessarily sit right with me to belittle what is a lot of people's passion, even if it's not a serious passion. We're not curing cancer. We're not, you know, but still.
No, well, that's true. I mean, I'm not going to sit and, you know, do needlecraft or, you know, knit.
Well, but nobody's dorky enough to do that. I mean, you
know. But I wouldn't make fun of people who do.
I was being sarcastic.
I get what you're saying. All right.
Have I brought you down enough now?
Yeah, you're just in a foul mood, man.
Yeah. Well,
the listeners are going to be shocked. They think that you're such a discreet and gentlemanly type there in Salt Lake City. Little do they, this is the real Barry.
Right. Yeah, pretty much is. And now Joe won't. Yeah. Well, if Joe would listen to the podcast, he would be upset now.
Joe won't listen, no matter what I do.
No.
All right. This guy is canceled, but it was interesting to me in House of Cards that Kevin Spacey was doing. It was really more toward wargaming. Looked like a massive Civil War diorama. He's playing, you know, first the Senate politician scheming to make his way to the White House, and then eventually the president over the run. And then he got in trouble with Me Too and was written out of the show. But, you know, with this Civil War diorama, he's, you know, he's using all the stuff we use, Tamiya cement and Woodland Scenic's ground cover, and, you know, he's painting the little figures, and they don't really give us a close-up of whether he did it justice or not, but...
No, he was a pretty despicable dude, actually, but yeah, that's...
Oh, in that show? Absolutely.
Oh, in that show, too, and that's, wow, man, it's just...
And apparently in real life.
Oh, yeah. Man, I don't want to be totally negative all the time, but... This is one of those things, a good example of what we talked about before, even on the podcast. I could not get into that show because I hated every last person in it, and I have a hard time watching a show. It's not like I want somebody to be just like me or to be great or anything, but there was nothing redeeming or interesting to me about any of the characters. I don't know.
Well, you know, Carmel was, at that point, still the television editor at the Chicago Tribune. So we were watching it because it was getting all this attention. You know, we were alienated by it way early on. This is a common... There are two tropes in film that get right under my skin. One is the reporter who sleeps with his or her source.
Oh, yeah.
To get the story, you know.
I don't even... What's a word beyond trope? Because that's... Like, you have to have that. Right?
And it's completely wrong. I've never in my entire career as a journalist seen anybody do that. Maybe I've worked with only good people. And the other one is the English professor who sleeps with his student.
Well, absolutely. It's required. Yeah. If it's a history professor, maybe not. You know, math, no, maybe not.
It's always English, the literature. Absolutely. English professor. Yeah,
tweed jacket. And,
Yeah. Being both a journalist and an English professor, I resent those two stereotypes. But, you know, the one thing you can say about evil mastermind Machiavellian politician Kevin Spacey and his wife, who's even nastier, you know, what's her name from, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Man, she's even nastier. She says to a pregnant woman at one point, "I hope the baby inside you withers and dies."
Yeah.
She's worse than he is.
So I wonder these two why people, I couldn't get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're completely despicable, but the one thing, what was I going to say? The one thing you could say about it is he's modeling and he does a halfway decent job. Also, here's a show you did love. You loved Babylon Berlin, right?
I loved that show. And I loved the parts in it where with the kid. Was it a whole bunch of parts or was it just one show where he...
I think there was only, you know, there were a couple of flashbacks to him as a kid. Grows up to be a detective in the Weimar era, as the Nazis are on the rise and, you know, the wildest, crazy, culturally artistic, sexually experimentive era of Weimar Berlin, Weimar Germany, but he had come back from World War One. Before that, he was a kid who built model airplanes. And you know, from the balsa wood. But he did a darn good job.
Yeah.
Painting them with oil paints, no less.
Yeah. There's no way in hell a model at that time would look like that. But that was pretty cool.
No. But it was nice to see.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, we collected some of these over two issues of The Scabbard. You know, anybody who enjoys the podcast who's not on our mailing list, please email me. And it's, you know, free circulation quarterly journal of the MMSI. We have fun articles and historical articles and all sorts of stuff. But I can't underscore enough, Barry, I'd like to keep this conversation going. I know we've only scratched the surface. There's got to be more.
No, there's a lot more.
Miniatures on film. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
Right? And it's one of those things where when you sit down to try to think about it, if you haven't kept the list going, it's like, I don't know. Then it hits you the next day. But we have this great program that we've paid for, and you can leave us a voice message. The link is on the blog for this show, where we're going to have pictures of Pat McGrath's modeling and him staging Small Plastic Wars, complete with the picture of Shep over his shoulder that he said was his dad. You know, just go to the blog or go to the social media posts and tell us what we're missing. And tell us what you loved or hated about your particular pick for miniature on film.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
It would be fun. It is
fantastic.
I'll probably get a lot of negative feedback on this one, but...
Well, I don't think the people at work listen to you, do you?
Oh, I don't care about them. I'm talking about modelers with my opinion about whatever, so...
Well, you know, it's just opinions. If they don't like it, they can start a podcast. All right. What else is on your mind, Biediger, since you're cranky and primed?
I just wanted to mention, and nothing to do with being cranky, but I have not mentioned modelpodcasts.com. And again, I always link to it in the social media posts. I believe you link to it in the blog.
Yes, we do.
And, you know,
list right up at the top.
List most of the other modeling podcasts. So,
yeah.
Give that up.
Ours is the best, though.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to bait you. I don't mean that. We talk more about stuff I'm interested in. What else was on your list there?
I don't know. Probably nothing.
Really? Oh, come on.
No,
you're in rare form.
No. I was informed last night, I hadn't thought of this. It really bothers me to hear this, but I was informed last night that the open system could never work at a larger show.
Oh, you had your IPMS.
Yeah. I was very disappointed to hear that because I had high hopes that, you know, larger modeling shows could use the open system at some point.
Didn't we have 3,000 modelers or something at the World Expo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah. You mean larger than that, it wouldn't work.
No. I'm being very sarcastic. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Which, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't even get me started. In addition to having to haul my ass into federal court merely for doing my job as a journalist, I had this experience with a collector this week.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, for some people, it's a freaking disease.
Yeah, it is.
A disease.
Yeah.
That cancels all social norms and removes all pretense of politeness or even basic civility or humanity.
Yep. And I want no part of that.
Enough said about that, brother.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I think I've said enough.
All right. Well, let's, you know, sooner or later, we're going to say enough things in one episode that people just say, oh, the hell with those guys.
Oh, it's not like enough people listen anyway.
It'll go back to being you just talking twice a week, you know? We don't have to hit record anymore.
Right, yeah. God, I did hit record in it, yeah. All right.
But don't hold anything we've said against Pat, because his play, Small Plastic Wars, is genius. And
it's fantastic.
We hope you enjoy it.
Yep, and seriously, listen to it with your family, as long as they're not sensitive to some profanity.
Yeah, but he says it with the Irish accent, so it goes down easier.
He says it with the Irish accent, but even they on that show warn people. So, yeah. And there are a lot of sensitive people, F-bomb. Yeah. So, yeah.
I guess so. I got in trouble one year for reading the awards and letting one loose. Oh, well. Thank you for listening, and thank you for indulging us.
Thanks for listening.
Just a reminder, to comment on anything we've said in this or any episode, or to pose a question, click on the link at www.boxdioramas.com/smallsubjects or in our social media posts.
There's no time limit, but please try to focus your comments because we'd love to include them in full on the show. Thanks.